Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Law.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 48 for August 16, 2010. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Inger.
Well, Ricky, we got a lot of stuff to cover today. A little less advocacy. We don't want to overdose you on that. So we have not one, not two, not three, but four product reviews. Paul Merrill shares his thoughts on the latest OpenBook 9.0 and the Pearl camera, which you can get now for $600, eventually going up to $1,100. Upgrade price on OpenBook is $150 if you already have a copy, and he'll share his thoughts on how that works. Buddy Brandon reviews the Freedom iConnex Bluetooth keyboard. Then later, Mike Calvo will talk about the BT Key Mini Bluetooth keyboard. There are options for your iPhone and iPod Touches other than the Apple device. Scott Rakowski joins me live here in the Evansville, Indiana studio. He came all the way over from Australia. Not to be on the podcast, but because he met Brandy.
Oh, so he didn't come over just for the podcast, and meeting Brandy was the icing on the cake. It worked the other way around, I guess.
You know, because she's such a fine girl. Anyway, she was named after that song. That's why I said that. You know people named after songs or soap opera characters? I knew an Ashley named after the Young and the Restless chick.
My niece's middle name is Alexa, who was, I think, a
not from Dynasty.
Dynasty, and I think there was one on Young and the Restless, which is the one that she was named after.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I know someone had triplets supposedly named after soap opera characters. So there you go. When all else fails, watch TV. And there was someone named Crystal, named her daughter Crystal after the character on Roseanne. So cool. Maybe there'll be some Michael and Rickies out there.
I don't think we've quite reached that status yet.
You might accomplish that. Someone might name their daughter after you. I have here in my little hands, it is the Magic Pad. And no, it is not a feminine hygiene product, but actually Magic Trackpad. And I saw a great post the other day. I wish I'd thought of it first. Is it a Magic Trackpad or a tragic
Mac Pad?
Yes. I would think anyone who owns a MacBook Pro really wouldn't need something like this. But basically, it is Apple's latest touch navigation device. Connect it via Bluetooth and see just exactly how well it works or does not work. Or do I really feel any benefit? Was it worth the $69 investment? The things I do for you, I tell you, folks.
I know. The sacrifices. Wow.
Only less toys than Mikey. It's not quite ready for prime time, but if you don't mind beta testing, and in this case, beta testing the latest beta of the Google Chrome web browser, System Access is working with it. I think the latest one is 6.0.0.4.9. So
yes,
if you install this and you can actually read web pages, they come up auto-reading just as we do in IE and Firefox. Because Google Chrome works a little differently, and you may want to make sure you uncheck the box so it doesn't become your default web browser.
I'm looking forward to checking this out. I haven't had the chance to do it, but apparently you've probably heard from lots of different sighted people who use this that Chrome is just lightning fast. I can't wait to check it out and see if that is in fact the case. There are still a few gotchas, and that's the case for the web browser as well as how System Access works with it. So it is beta, but it's apparently some really good stuff.
Yeah, this is something we've been working on for a while. We did what we could, our programming team, and then handed the ball back to Google. So it looks like they're finally getting around to making these implementations. It also works with the latest beta of NVDA. So those are your two options for if you want to play around with the latest Google Chrome browser. You know, I was looking here, Ricky. Did you know at least the Asus netbooks, many of them have dropped to $199. In fact, we posted a link the other day to...
That one was $179, the link that we posted from Woot.com. That was a refurb. But I think generally, yeah, you can get these netbooks for $199. Just takes $149 to outfit that bad boy with System Access Atom Edition. So for under $350, you've got yourself a nice functional talking machine.
Yes, a working netbook with a screen reader. And if you want a scanning solution, you can go just barely over $500.
DocuScan
to that, or we're always glad to see when the price barrier lowers for access technology. So you can certainly shop around. If a netbook meets your needs, they're not for everyone, but if you do basic web browsing and email and just listening to some audio like this podcast and playing music and Winamp, yes, you can even run iTunes and even Office on. As long as you don't try to multitask too much, a netbook just might meet your needs. There was an interesting study that came out that said 60% of people fear blindness more than heart disease. We talk about the way that we're treated as if people think that we're ignorant, and this should just be a reminder that the way that people treat us really is out of fear, and the fear that they have that losing their eyesight could happen to them and not having a clue of what it really means.
That's amazing. Blindness is scarier than heart disease. I mean, one of them could kill you, and the other one most likely will not. People react out of fear. I'm still surprised by the numbers, though.
If you think about it, it explains a lot in the way that we're treated by certain people. You know, we assume it's ignorance, and of course it is in one extent, but it's the bigger element is fear. Oracle is suing Google over the Android technology, and we would believe in particular, or especially over the Java that they acquired when they bought Sun for like $6 point something billion. So this raises a few questions. It's kind of complex. You can go read the story at serotalk.com and get a little more insight. Essentially, you know, the Android runs off an operating system that someone else believes they have the rights to. And so this is raising a lot of questions about, did Google modify it enough that they believe it is their own language and independent of what Oracle and Sun have?
Or should Oracle get billions and billions of dollars, depending on how successful Android becomes?
Well, I think that's the key. They're hoping to get some money out of Google, and then they can go right down the line to HTC and all the other manufacturers and maybe recoup most, if not all, of the $6.5 billion that they invested in acquiring Sun. Or could this kill Java? Could they just say, all right, well, we're going to go with other technologies? It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Will Google just pay some money and be on their way, or will litigation go on for years? Will this stifle creativity in the creation of new phones and other devices using that operating system? Will it give the iPhone and Apple an upper hand? It'll be curious to see how this plays out. IE9, Internet Explorer 9.0 beta, is going to be launched on September the 15th. But again, this is not going to be for XP users. So again, we're going to start to see Windows Live Messaging and all these other technologies. We're going to see that XP is going to slowly be left behind. But my question, Ricky, did you not think that IE7 was more stable than 8?
Actually, yes. IE8 crashes for me much more frequently than 7 ever did.
Right. So my thought is, I wonder if XP can't go to 9, I wonder if you're almost better to maybe go back to 7.0.
Stay with 7, perhaps. I, of course, advocate that people get used to the idea that XP is going to go away, and just to bite the bullet and upgrade to Windows 7 when you can, because things are just going to continue to move forward and XP is going to be left further and further behind. And hey, Windows 7 is not so bad, especially if you get something like, what is it, PowerShell? I don't use that, but you guys do.
I don't use it, actually, because it doesn't work with some screen readers. It does work with System Access. But yeah, the PowerShell does kind of give you the original kind of Windows Classic
experience
view for the Start menu and the Windows Explorer. But I've kind of gotten used to Windows 7. And since I do switch between System Access and WindowEyes, Wii doesn't like it. So I've kind of abandoned it and moved on. So, but that is an option there to help people migrate if it makes a difference. The key is their hardware new enough to switch? So if you have XP, you know, work it while it lasts. But right, if you get a new box, don't be afraid. Some blind folks, and I guess even sighted folks as well, are afraid of Windows 7, you know, learning something new. But it is a pretty powerful system. I do have one XP machine, mainly because there's still some audio stuff I can only do in XP. And maybe when the Service Pack 1 comes out, slated for early 2011, then maybe it'll get rid of some of those annoying little bonk sounds that it makes when something quits responding in Windows 7, which
yes,
is the main reason I have not totally left XP behind.
Don't make me give up my XP. I love it, man.
It's going away. Get rid of it.
No.
Now.
No.
All right.
Thank you.
I feel good now. I've been vindicated.
Good.
Well, something we may not feel very good about. In the last 3 months alone, over 6 million malicious files, different pieces of software, or it could be Trojan worms, things installed on websites. But over 6 million mean and nasty files have been found online. Very interesting article to link to over at SarahTalk.com if you're curious of the different ways. It's interesting how exploits take different popularity based on what country you're in. Some countries are the king of spam with over 16 different topics, where all I get is that there Viagra and some rich woman wants to give me her money.
There are several princes who on a regular basis want to give me money.
I bet. I haven't seen many of the Russian brides lately. I'm sure that one's still floating around, but
I've never gotten a Russian bride offer.
You got that Ricky. They think it's a male name. Maybe they'd be giving you one of them Russian brides up in there.
Yeah.
Tied a lot to, they look at guys who are going to sites like eHarmony or...
Makes sense.
Right. So it depends on where you're going on the web. But speaking of sites to visit, a new site for iPhone apps is AppleVis. That's AppleVis.com. And what's cool is everybody that's posting accessible apps is also including descriptions, because I've seen some lists of maybe 100 apps, but you don't know what they do. Maybe they're categorized, but it's still nice to have a little paragraph that says, here's what it does. It does instant messaging and Skype and all that other cool stuff, which reminds me, you've been playing with something new, right? The IM Pro Plus. This was an app that people had to advocate for accessibility, but they finally got it done in 4.3. And even though
that's
it costs $9.95, I guess it's a pretty powerful messaging client. And I know a few folks have laid their money down.
It's well worth it. It's IM Plus Pro. Liam Irvin and some other folks on Twitter, Daryl Shandro, several others, were in talks with developers both via Twitter and email trying to get this thing to happen. And boy, did it ever. Best $10 I ever spent for an app. You can do Skype, although I haven't tested that yet, but you can do things like ICQ, Facebook chat, Twitter, all the standard stuff.
Windows Live and AIM.
Yes, Windows Live, AIM, Yahoo. There is a little bit of a caveat. The Facebook chat is the only somewhat inaccessible portion of it, and it's only through setting it up. You get a couple of permissions screens, or you have to click a connect button, and the connect and the permissions buttons were not visible for me when I went through and did it, but others have had different results with that. But other than that, everything else is completely accessible. It works very, very well. So IM Plus Pro, if you want to search for that in the App Store. Getting back to the topic at hand, which was AppleVis, the thing I like the most about it is that there are some applications which are accessible, but there may be a couple of workarounds to make certain things happen. The color identification app I use, for example, you have to turn VoiceOver off to touch a spot on the image and then turn it back on to see what color you're looking at. Those are the types of things that you can describe in detail whenever you post an app to AppleVis.
Yeah, I like that it's a community effort and different people can post, and I need to get involved with that and encourage you as well to go check it out. And if you're using a cool app that's not listed there, that you go ahead and put in your 2 cents and describe a little bit how it works, what it does, and if there's any little caveats, maybe some unlabeled buttons, what those might be, or right if you need to turn off VoiceOver at certain times to accomplish things. So check it out, AppleVis.com. Well, we talked before about the House Bill HR 3101, which Senate has passed S3304, and you can get a 71-page PDF with all of the information. I just kind of have to wonder, so we have two different bills. You know, what's going to happen? Is there going to be some kind of compromise between the two? Or we need to get someone on who follows this and can break all this down and find out exactly what the House bill is offering for the disabled community versus what the Senate bill is offering and versus what compromises may kick in where this is concerned. A new Audible book that Mike Calvo tweeted about 12 days ago. It is called How to Run an Online Business That Pays and Pays. So maybe you can't find work, or maybe you've always wanted to sell a product or service and want to learn how to work in the online e-commerce realm. It's a great book. You can check it out over at audible.com. We have a direct link to the page where you can read a description of it and purchase it if you like. There's a new talking TV set-top box by a company called Goodman. RNIB is distributing it right now in the UK only, but we do have a link to the page where you can go hear a demo. There's a 4-minute demo and even a full-length interview. You can check that out.
Yeah, they did that at Site Village this year, right?
Yes, they did. Good old Site Village. Tells you how many channels and a lot of cool information there, and I think there's going to be even more enhancements in the future. I didn't hear the price. I just listened to the 4-minute presentation. I'm excited. I think it would be really cool to just sit down and kind of go through the channels and know what they are and maybe know what's on or what's coming on next or maybe up to the next 2 hours. You know, of course, we can do it on our PCs, but a lot of folks don't have computer access, or maybe you're, you know, somewhere else where it's just easier to have that straight UI. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's nothing like sitting in front of your TV and being able to do something right there.
Ricky, what would you do if you dropped your iPhone or cell phone in the water? What would you do?
I believe that the first thing I would do is fall over in a dead faint. When I woke up, I would probably start shrieking and freaking out, and then I'd probably go look for a way to get that fixed.
I have a link to an article that gives you the best possible solution for resolving this. First thing, the obvious, of course, get it out of the water and get as much of the water removed as possible. Then you turn the device off right away, and you remove the SIM card. And then, this is the cool thing, you put the phone into a bag of rice and then seal it, make sure there's no air in there, close it up for like 48 to 72 hours. I guess rice must absorb the moisture, which would make sense.
Yeah, I guess it draws the moisture out of the phone.
So there you go. All the cool uses for rice. You ever go to the cowboy's house, you better take a bag of rice with you.
I'm assuming this would work for not just your iPhone, but any electronics. That certainly couldn't hurt to do that, right?
That's what the Twitter post said, that this would work for other devices as well as the iPhone, right? I remember I had a VCR remote in my shirt pocket when I went into the restroom, and need I say more? But bag of rice, folks. An Apple manager was charged with allegedly leaking secrets, which supposedly netted him up to $1 million, basically sharing information with various, I think, 6 different Asian companies about what Apple was doing and funneling a lot of money through some third-party entities. But the big gotcha, the big mistake, he did some of the business, I guess, on a company computer. That's a no-no. If you're going to commit a crime, don't do it on the company computer. Hello?
That's not terribly bright. Nobody's ever going to catch me. I'll just launder this money from right here. Again, not too bright. He was sharing this stuff mostly with suppliers that Apple's working with. Is that right? The people, for example, that they're outsourcing some of these components to?
While on Apple, of course, they released 4.0.2 fix for some different security issues for the iPhone. And apparently I felt it was pretty important because I know 4.1 beta 3 is already out. But as soon as I turned on iTunes, popped up right away and said, hey, there's a new update available. Whereas sometimes you don't see that unless you actually go check for updates. So they wanted to get this out to the masses. We also encourage people to get the latest. There's new versions of 10.1, a flash for both IE and the non-IE. So if you're using Firefox or you're using Chrome, a lot of updates. I guess last week's patch Tuesday was the largest number of updates ever in 1 week. But also there were updates to .NET, which was a separate thing. And then, of course, there was Flash. So there's a lot of stuff going on there to keep track of. Finally, Peter Bosley found an app called Phoneable, or Phoneable, however you pronounce it. But
yeah, basically, not sure which.
But basically, it allows you to sync your iPhone with multiple libraries. And I believe it's specifically for music. I didn't see applications mentioned, but there are some limitations. Right now, it's only in Windows, but they are working on a Macintosh version. And it is only 32-bit. I've downloaded it. I haven't run it yet. Anyway, that's all I've got here for the news. Like I said, we got 4 great product reviews coming up. We welcome your comments and suggestions to resources at serotalk.com, or you can phone the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB. We really got some good ideas. We're looking at some of them, some for podcasts, but a few actually for tech chats.
Tech chat,
We had some really good tech chat ideas. There'll be some good roundtable discussions, and we'll get some experts in place. We're scraping up some Android users so that we're not all iPhone. And believe me, if people are making it work, we want to get them on and have them tell us how to get up to speed and, you know, what the pros and cons are, because believe me, if Android is usable and doable out there and people are making it happen, we want to share that information with you.
That's right. It's all about choice.
We're voices with choices, or voices
you
for choices.
It.
Yay. All right. Well, Ricky, I will see you on the 30th. Till then, I hope you stay connected and stay directed, or keep me directed or something.
Yeah, that's a full-time job. All right. Let's go check out some reviews.
This is Paul Merrill. Review of my initial findings with the new OpenBook 9.0 with the camera portable reading solution. You can download the OpenBook trial, which will eventually be the same program you authorize, freedomscientific.com, and you can find out all about the new features and enhancements in the program. There was a demo in a past podcast of FSCast. It was quite a demo, so if you're not sure what this whole scanning software program is all about, wonderful program, good concept, and I think that they will go far with this solution. At least it'll be a valid alternative. I do have to say, the camera being on sale at present is a good thing. I'm not sure that $1,100 plus is going to be within the price range of the average consumer. If you have a big wallet, then by all means, get out there and make your purchase. But for now, I would take advantage of the sale, as I did. The OpenBook installer is pretty cool. Not too bad. You essentially run it like any other installer. You do want to be careful if you're running Windows Vista or 7/64-bit. It's going to prompt you to install a couple of DLLs, and you might want to also review the options that you wish to install. Go through and do a custom install. It does install a stripped-down version of JAWS, and oddly enough, it's a 40-minute version, believe it or not. I walked away from my OpenBook because I'd started the install, had to take a phone call. I came back and was told that the JAWS authorization had expired, so I had to restart my whole PC. The other thing that was kind of peculiar was when I went to start the OpenBook installer, I was running my system access, and I had two screen readers running at the same time. So generally speaking, you have to figure out how to shut one down and continue with the other. So I would suggest if you're going to do the install of OpenBook, pick custom if possible. Now as we go through here, you're going to find the installer is pretty basic. It will detect your scanner. You shouldn't have any real issues. Of course, everybody has a different scanner. If it's a little bit older, you might see that it might not address all the features. As a low vision user, I do find it quite nice being able to see the exact image. And for once, I can actually say it's nice to see a release with a few less broken features. Oh, but wait, I do have a broken feature, and we'll get to that in a second. Program runs good. It loads fairly fast. Shouldn't have too many difficulties. It does observe the user account control. I'm kind of surprised Freedom Scientific didn't opt to go with the traditional storage of your libraries and scanned documents in the documents under your user account rather than under the C:\programfiles, x86 or program files, depending on the bit of your system, 32 or 64-bit. I was kind of surprised. I work for a software company myself, the SAM Broadcaster, Spatial Audio Solutions. I have to say, we've already moved all of our settings even over into the app data or the place where it is got proper permissions. Really quite surprised. You know, you're editing a document. You're going to be doing lots of different changes. You need to have your permissions. And with all the PCs I see out there, especially from our sight lanes, it's like the wild kingdom of tech support. With the OpenBook, you will find it to be quite nice. Launch the program. I did also purchase the Pearl, the reading solution, the little camera you stick on the table. It's got a nice long boom. You got the two options. You got the LED light, and you have the actual camera lens itself. And it's got a nice little paper guide. Now, the thing with the camera is it seems pretty decent. My Windows picked it right up. I was able to begin to check things out. However, when I launched OpenBook, the camera wasn't detected. My Windows is saying, hey, I'm seeing you here. Here's what it is. It's showing properly in Device Manager. It's doing all the good stuff. But hey, wait a second. I open up OpenBook. I go to the advanced options, pull down, and I see my scanner. And there's no Pearl option. So I have submitted the support ticket. We'll follow through with the usual procedures, and we'll see what happens. So there are a few little things to work out. Hopefully they'll get things resolved with the later update. You can always check for updates once the software is installed by pulling down Help and Check for Updates. It's kind of a nice feature there. And if your system is clean and you've done all your homework, you should have no problem. Definitely kind of interesting. If you'd like to try out the trial, go head over to www.freedomscientific.com. The 40-minute mode will suffice for testing. You can compare and contrast, see what it does versus what your older version does, if you've got that around, or maybe, say, you're using Kurzweil. I'm just kind of giving this input to the Serotalk podcast simply as a user, and I want folks to know what they're kind of getting into. So proceed with caution, folks, and as always, let your voice be known. If they don't know there's a problem, they'll never be able to fix it. The dealers out there will do what they can to try to help out. And let's see what other items are brought to the table. I am really, really eager. For the Serotalk Podcast, I'm Paul Merrill.
Hi, this is Buddy Brandon, and I have here in my hot little hands a new toy. We like new toys. This is the Freedom iConnects keyboard. It's I-CONNEX. It's very like their more expensive Freedom Input Bluetooth keyboard, whose name escapes me at the moment. I think it's just called the Freedom Input Pro. The only difference that I think there really is that this one doesn't have a serial profile. It just has an HID profile and is specifically for portable PDAs and cell phones like the iPhone, for instance. It's not exactly small, but it's not huge. Folded up, it's 4x6, something like that. And the reason I got it was because it folds, and when it unfolds, it's more or less full size, but I got it because it folds, and it'll be nice and small and easy to carry. So the first thing that I really want to do is to thank Daryl Shandro at www.blindaccessjournal.com for doing the hard work, because he actually bought the more expensive version of this keyboard. Back in June, he bought it, and learned how to pair it, so the rest of us didn't have to. So I've only had this keyboard for a little while. Came in the mail today. Came packed in a bubble envelope. So opened that, pulled out the box, and the box had the keyboard, two AAA batteries, manual, and a handy keyboard case to put the keyboard in. It fits in there folded up, and it has a little magnetic closure to keep it from sliding out. Nice little leather case. So the keyboard itself, it's a plastic keyboard made out of plastic. Seems like it should be fairly durable. Anyway, so the first thing that we have to do with this thing before we can do anything is open it, which was a challenge initially, but there's a button right on the side of it that you press. You press the button and it springs right open, like that. And it opens right to left, and on the left side of the keyboard, and you'll know it's facing the correct direction, because on the left side of the keyboard is the battery compartment. And to open it, there's a ridged thing on towards the back of the battery compartment. You just push it backwards and it pops loose, and then you can put it aside and you put the batteries in. You put them in with the flat end towards you, push them all the way back, and then put the cover back on, snaps right back into place. Now, there are a few non-standard key placements on here that we'll go over later, but first, let's pair this thing. So I've already paired it, so I'll just describe the process quite simply. You turn it on, and you turn it on by sliding this little toggle switch to the left, which seems counterintuitive to me. It seems to me it should go to the right, but it doesn't. It goes to the left. So you slide that to the left, and then you have to put it in pairing mode by taking a toothpick or a paperclip or something like that and holding down this button for 4 or 5 seconds and light it up, and then you can pair it. Now, on the iPhone, to pair, you go to, you open General under the settings, and then you go to Bluetooth. And under Bluetooth, when you're in pairing mode, you should see an icon that says Freedom iConnex keyboard, and it's I-CONNEX. So you double tap on that, and it'll give you a PIN number to type into the keyboard. It took me 3 unsuccessful tries before I finally got it, and that was because the number row is a bit non-standard. There are 2 keys to the left of the one. The keys are a little bit smaller, so if you're used to touch typing on the number row, it's a little bit odd, but there are 2 keys to the left of the number 1. Oh, it's escape and then accent, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. So once Alina told me that, I was good to go, and I was able to type in the 4-digit PIN number, and it paired no problem. And then it gets out of pairing mode, and you can type. And then all you have to do is just, when you want to use it, turn it on. When you're done using it, turn it off. Very friendly. It's a toggle switch. If it's to the left, you know it's on. If it's to the right, you know it's off. Very blind friendly that way. Okay, so non-standard key place. Like I said, the numbers start in an odd place. There's a key to the left of the backspace key. Of course, the backspace key is out at the far right of the keyboard. There's a key to the left of that, which I'm not sure what it is. It's probably insert, but I'm not sure. The right shift key is the same size as the standard keys, more or less. And it's right above the right arrow and directly to the right of the up arrow, so you have to be careful not to press the up arrow when you're trying to hit the right shift. This looks like it's a PC layout. There's a key that I don't know what it is, and then there's the control key, and then there's another key that I don't know what it is, and then there's the Windows, I guess, and then Alt, which of course the iPhone calls Command, and then Option, and then the 2 space bars. Now there's, because it folds, it's a split space bar, and there's one under each thumb. There's a space bar under each thumb as your hands naturally sit on the keyboard. So there's 2 space bars, and then there's Alt, and then Windows, and then something, and then it says at somehow, so I think that there's actually a dedicated at key for some reason, but again, I'm not sure. I haven't had this keyboard very long, so I don't know all the keys yet, all the special keys or the differently placed keys and so forth. Now, there are 6 keys down the left side of the keyboard. that are dedicated media function keys. Very handy. From top to bottom, they're volume up, volume down. Previous track, play pause, next track, and then at the bottom is the home key. Pretty handy. You'll be able to sit with your Bluetooth keyboard near whatever docking station you have. I happen to have the Bose SoundDock Portable, and you can control the your music playing sort of from the keyboard. So that's pretty handy. This keyboard costs $69, www.freedominput.com, and they're based in the UK, and it was $69 plus shipping. I think after shipping it came to $83 and change. Fairly good deal. It's about the same price as the Apple keyboard, but the reason that I picked it over the Apple keyboard was because it folds up, so it'll be a little bit easier to carry. Again, unlike the Apple keyboard, it is plastic. The Apple keyboard is aluminum. Being plastic, though, it still seems like it's reasonably sturdily built, even though it's sort of intended for PDAs and so forth, and it's called iSomething. It definitely wasn't laid out with the iPhone specifically in mind, just because of the placement of the keys and so forth. Option and command are switched. Be that as it may, it seems like it's pretty decent. The tactile feedback on the keyboard is good, especially for its size. There is one feature that it has that I haven't really quite figured out how to deal with, and that is that it comes with the feature set calls it a PDA stand, and that slides into the back of the keyboard, and you can just sort of take your thumbnail and pull it out, and looks like a little drawer, and then it just pops open, and you can then put your iPhone or your BlackBerry or your whatever on it. I'm not sure if it is somehow supposed to attach, or if you're just supposed to sit it up there somewhere alongside and have it so you can see the screen better or what. I haven't quite determined that, but there it is. There's a stand for your iPhone so it isn't just sitting somewhere so you can see it better. So that's it. That's the Freedom iConnex keyboard from freedominput.com. It'll take a little bit of getting used to typing on it, I think, but it should be a lot faster than typing on the touch screen. Now, don't misunderstand. Typing on the touch screen is very possible. I'm not very fast at it. Ricky's probably faster at it than I am, but for doing a lot of editing or a lot of tweeting or what have you, I think really having a Bluetooth keyboard is probably going to be a little easier, and that's why I got this thing. So should be fun to play with, and we'll keep y'all posted. More toys are coming, which I will talk to y'all about on the next Budcast. Thanks to Michael Loft for letting me play in the Serotalk sandbox, and I'll see y'all again next time on the Budcast.
Podcast 48, full of product reviews. We doing not just one, but two Bluetooth keyboards. And I have Mike Calvo here to talk about
the BT Key Mini. The cool thing, Michael, is to see us as blind folks kind of helping each other out as consumers and saying, you know, this works well for me, this doesn't work well for me. So, and I hope that folks understand that we report on things as we see them as consumers. We're not here to do the most in-depth reviews on things. The BT Key Mini has been around, well, in concept, oh my gosh, I think I started reading about this thing in 2008 at some point. And of course, you know how Apple just took its sweet time to offer access to the Bluetooth stack. The only time that they did offer access was when they themselves put out a Bluetooth keyboard. I know Brian has the actual Apple one, but he hasn't used it enough to really be able to tell me if he likes it or not. This particular keyboard, it sells for $99. I found it for $79 over at www.macmall.com, macmall.com, and there's a link on the Serotalk page. My experience with them was awesome. I actually got to order this thing, believe it or not, for next day for $12. So that's pretty unheard of for anywhere.
Okay, and so the other ones are coming in at $69, and this one retails for $99, even with a discount of $79. What does it bring to the party that we're not seeing in the Apple or the iConnex keyboard that Buddy reviewed? For one thing, it's an external stand that you get with this device, right?
Yeah, it's actually really cool. First, I've got the keyboard in my hand, and it is made of plastic. The Apple one is made of metal, and it's flat, and it's very reminiscent, Michael, of your keyboard for the Mac. This looks a lot more like a laptop type keyboard. The stand is this flat piece of plastic with kind of an indented lip. And the way it works is you set your iPad or your iPhone on this lip, and the big part of the stand sits behind the device, kind of counterbalancing it, and the device leans back on this back lip. On the bottom, we have the keyboard. It's plastic, and it is very small. I mean, it's not itty bitty, though. It is not uncomfortable to type on. I can actually hold it in my hands and type on it, putting my thumbs under the keyboard and kind of typing on it as I go here. Or I can set it up on top of the desk and I can type on it as well. It's very easy. You pair it once. You can pair it to more than one device. As you switch it on, if you're near the device that you want to use it with, be it your iPhone or your iPad or whatever, it will pair right up. And it does it very quickly. I can literally turn this thing on and be typing on my iPad or my iPhone in a couple of minutes. Now, the bad thing, of course, the only limitation to typing in there is you cannot navigate the menus, if you will, with the keyboard very well. Just like the regular keyboard, it's made to be typed on in edit boxes or whatever.
Does this keyboard fold in half for portability?
No, it looks to me like it's meant to be carried in a bag. This is not something you're going to carry in your pocket. But Michael, it's not that big. It really isn't. I love the stand because even with the Apple device, you've got this really sexy thin keyboard. How are you going to look at it? Because you'd have to put your eye device flat. This thing holds your eye device at an angle so it can lean back. The iPad and the iPhone can be put in a portrait or a landscape mode. And it comes with two AAA batteries in the box. It's got a range, I think, of about 10 meters. 30 feet. Very cool little device. When you're finished with it, you just pop it in the back here. That's it. And just slip it in your bag. It's very, very convenient to carry. And when you want to just start typing, you just whip it out and start typing on whatever device you're on. When you're finished, you just put it away. Great device. I'm glad to see that they've got a couple of different devices available for the iDevices. I would love to see some entrepreneurial, innovative company in our space come out with a Braille keyboard for the iDevices, be it the iPhone or iPad or even Android devices. Can't be too much of a stretch. If we can get a Braille display, why not get a Braille keyboard? And while the Braille keyboard on the Kinect and all of that does work, I'd like to see a standalone keyboard for these devices that you can just carry in your bag. I would love a Braille keyboard. I mean, I could just, can you imagine typing in grade 2, which you can do, by the way, with the Braille Kinect or with the Refresher Braille, just with a regular little keyboard that isn't going to run you as much as one of those devices. Overall, I give this thing about a 9 out of 10, Michael. I really would. I think it's an awesome product. I'm very happy with it. As far as Bluetooth keyboards go, I'm going to stop looking. You don't have trouble typing on the keyboard, although you are missing the numpad. There is no numpad. There is an embedded numpad. I don't know how you use it exactly, but that's just because I really haven't had an interest in it. I haven't read the manual. It does have dedicated volume buttons and mute for your music player and that kind of thing while you're playing, you know, music on your iDevice. There's probably a ton of features that I haven't looked at.
Well, we encourage people to read product reviews like CNET or even JR.com or even Amazon, where users comment on the product. So that's a very important thing to do. Or if possible, if you live in an area where that's an option, to go out to the store and check it out firsthand.
And definitely read the product manuals if you can find them online. They also kind of give you a view of how things are going, you know, and how things work.
Okay, well, check it out. It's the BT Key Mini. Google it or get a link right from Serotalk.com. I got a new toy for the iMac that allows me to have the functionality of all of those cool flick gestures that we enjoy on the iPhone and iPod Touch and the iPad. This is Apple's newest product called the Magic Trackpad. It is $69 is the cost for the bad boy. As far as dimensions, I didn't look them up formally, but it looks like it's about 6 inches, almost symmetrical, about 6 inches wide and maybe just a little bit longer than that, and very thin in typical Apple fashion, what, maybe 1/4 inch thick. So you have the smooth trackpad surface, but you actually set it down what you might think is the opposite direction. When you first get it, you got this bar that goes across that holds the batteries and probably is also an antenna, and at first you assume maybe that faces upward, but actually it faces downward, and that therefore allows the device to have just a slight slope to it, which is cool. When you place it that way, on the right side on top of this bar, you have a power button, and on the left side you have basically a cap that you remove to replace the two AA batteries that come inside the device. So you can use either a number 3 or number 4 flathead screwdriver or probably some other device to accomplish that, but you have to do it that way. You can't can't really turn it loose with your finger. Probably not, because if you leave it loose enough to turn it with your hand, it wiggles a little bit. So that might be a downside for some folks who don't have flathead screwdrivers lying around or whatever, but you can use other tools to do that. Again, as I said, it comes with two AA batteries, but the batteries they gave me were dead because when I first tried the device, it kept shutting off after about a minute. And before I decided to send it back, I thought, well, let's try some other batteries, and that solved the issue. And it's got a nice, smooth surface. I think it said 80% larger than the actual trackpad that comes on your MacBooks, as far as the actual space that you can use to do all the flick gestures. And to my knowledge, it is pretty much the same. I thought I read where there are a couple of additional ones that you don't get on the MacBook Pro, but I'm not sure what those are. So it comes with the batteries in it. It has a little stickers over the power button. You pull that off. You power it on, and then you go into the Bluetooth menu of your iMac and enable that if it's not already enabled. And then you search for devices, and it came right up and saw the magic trackpad. I didn't have to enter any codes or anything. I just paired them up, and that was the easy part. What threw me and annoyed me, I must say, is that you have to, before you can do anything, you have to get a software update in place. It just won't work. You can flick between your open Finder and your apps screen or whatever you might have open, but that's all you can do. So I go do the software update, and it keeps saying there's no new software available. And after like the fifth time, it finally said, okay, there's an update for the Magic Trackpad. I think it was around 72 meg, so I don't know why it took so long to go out and get that for me. So just be persistent, and eventually you can get that in place. I have my friend here, all the way from that there, Sydney, Australia. He is here in studio with me, Mr. Scott Rakowski. I'm going to let him demo it, because I want an external, third-party, unbiased opinion. Is this worth adding to your iMac? Or maybe if you have an older MacBook that predates the MacBook Pro that does not have the trackpad feature built in, is it worth the $69 to have these gestures when you can pretty much do almost everything on the keyboard? But there are a few things you can do with the trackpad that make it nice. You know, navigating web pages or like on iTunes. So is this necessary? Or is it just a cool thing to have? But let's give you a little demo right now.
First thing we will demo is how to access the keyboard help with Vocay, and then you can actually practice your gestures on the trackpad.
Starting keyboard help. Type keys to hear their names. Hold down the voiceover keys while typing to hear voiceover commands. So, press the escape key at the top left corner of the keyboard to stop help.
So basically, the first thing you'll notice with the trackpad is it is very sensitive. So patience is a virtue when you're using the trackpad. So what I'm going to do is just do a few little gestures on the trackpad. You can do these anywhere. So I'm just going to flick left so you can hear what happens.
Flick left, move left, moves the voiceover cursor left.
So if you're used to the iPhone, the iPad, and the iOS line of devices, you'll find these interesting. And the MacBook has it all built in. We'll go to the right.
Flick right, moves the voiceover cursor right.
And if we flick left with two fingers.
Two finger flick left, stop interacting with item. Stops interacting with item. Focus voiceover cursor out to inspect surrounding items.
So that's kind of nice. And if you double tap top center with two fingers.
Two finger double tap top, go to menu bar, moves voiceover cursor to the menu bar.
So that's like doing VoM. You can do the same down in the bottom center to the dock.
Two finger double tap bottom, go to dock, moves voiceover cursor to the dock.
Three finger flick left.
Three finger flick left, scroll right one page, scrolls right by one page. Three finger tap, speak current page in scroll area, speaks the currently displayed scroll page.
We'll go down with three fingers.
Three finger flick down, scroll up one page, scrolls up by one page, double tap, perform action for item, performs the default action on the item in the voiceover cursor.
Hop out of there with the escape key
escape,
to leave that.
Stopping keyboard help.
So what I'm going to show is how to access the dock and how to open up iTunes or launch an application from the dock. And I'm just using one hand on the trackpad. I'm not even next to the Mac. Double tap the bottom left center.
Dock finder.
So I'm going to flick right, just like if you're flicking on the iPhone or any of the other devices.
Mail. Safari.
And when you found the icon you're wanting.
iTunes.
You double tap with a single finger anywhere on the trackpad.
iTunes. Finder. Desktop. W010.
So iTunes should come up.
iTunes. Window. iTunes 1. Sources. One row selected. Column 1. Music.
Excellent.
Library playlist has keyboard focus.
So the trick here, we want to go to the radio category. So I'm going to interact with the source list by flicking two fingers to the right.
Interact with sources, column 1, music.
And I'm going to flick down, and that's emulating the down arrow key press.
Movies, library playlist, TV shows, library playlist, podcasts, library playlist, store, radio, stream.
Excellent. Okay, so now I'm going to flick to the right. Now I've got to stop interacting first. Okay, so I'll stop interacting.
Stop interacting with sources, one row selected.
And I'll
column
go to
1,
the right.
Radio, vertical splitter. Songs, no selection.
And I'm going to interact with this songs list.
Blank, collapsed, stream, alternative, okay. Rock, ambient, collapsed.
I'm going to go down, flicking with one finger, and we will select classic rock.
Blues, classic rock, collapsed.
Flick down so you can hear what's happening.
Absolute classic rock, all classic hits, one, all southern rock.
Okay, so just say we want to listen to that station, I'm going to stop interacting by flicking with two fingers to the left.
Showing rows 1 to 44, stop interacting with songs, one row selected,
so
status.
Vertex sources. Going to go to the play
blank
button,
search
by
text field
to the left.
Cover flow, grid views, text list, LCDs, full volume, 100, mute. Next, play.
So normally what you do is you'd press enter to select the station once you found it using the keyboard. Double tap on the play button. And then what I'm going to do is flick to the right to the next button. Then you can just double tap and keep flicking through the different stations one after the other. So I'm going to start playing it now.
Press play.
I'm going to go to the right. Just next, double tap on the finger.
Press next.
I'm going to double tap again.
Press next. Press stop.
So as you can see, you can sit back in your chair a long way from your Mac, up to, I think it's 10 meters, 30 feet. And so you can control your Mac from the trackpad, get to the dock. You can close applications here. We'll just show you how you can close one.
Previous.
Go to the left with the one finger.
iTunes, zoom button, minimize, but close button. Press close button.
It's a bit of getting used to. Very sensitive device. That may be a setting you can adjust in the system preferences. The key is give it time. Play with it. I think once you get used to it, it's a really cool addition to have for any iMac.
Thank you for that, Scotty. So in conclusion, you want to really make sure you have the trackpad on a flat surface, so having it on your lap sometimes makes you click things you didn't intend to. Maybe there's some adjustments to reduce the default sensitivity. I notice it seems to keep going into the navigation mode by character or word, and I really don't feel like I'm performing that gesture. So again, I don't know the device well enough to know if it's things that I'm doing wrong, or maybe ultimately there's some fine tuning that'll come in the use of the trackpad. Of course, 10.6.5 should be out pretty soon, and maybe that'll enhance its functionality. Scotty likes it, and I think he's going to go out and get one of these bad boys today. It adds some cool features. You know, you still need the keyboard, so I'm kind of like, well, geez, maybe the ideal scenario would have been kind of a combo Bluetooth keyboard and the trackpad built into it. It does pretty much what it claims to do. And if anyone has a master list of all of the commands or something, I haven't found one thus far, but I haven't spent a lot of time looking. Certainly, again, enhances accessibility. By all means, if you have an iMac or one of the older MacBooks and you want that functionality, go grab one of those today at Apple.com.
You've been listening to Cerro Talk. Visit us at www.cerrotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@cerrotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.